So this life is a school. All and everything, all interactions, what we see, what we do, every moment actually, is teaching something to us. But learning is not easy, if you would accept. Learning is difficult. Now we gather here every Saturday for the last 35 years, maybe 40. I don't know, it looks like we are talking about the same thing every Saturday. The subject is the same. At least we are actually looking at the same subject from different perspectives, directions, but it's all about us. How can we become better human being? And it's really not easy to acquire that kind of knowledge just by listening. See, our standard methods of learning, knowledge acquired, acquiring knowledge, there are certain standard methods. We read books, we listen to people who know, and then through that we try to learn new things. But that's one of the least efficient methods of learning things. We learn based on what we hear from other people. We learn based on what we read other people's wrote, their opinions. Usually the one who see, the one who knows, make a description. He draws a map of things that we don't know, and based on that we kind of looking at this descriptive qualities of things, we try to associate this new thing that we are supposed to learn with what we have already learned. There's this incredible association going on with the new things that you see and with what you have inside you. And if you just read the things other people write, the author most of the time doesn't live in the same space you live. The author most of the time does not live in the same time you live. That is, there's no really interaction between the author and the reader. So there's a description, an opinion, and from that opinion you try to extract things from the description that is given. So that type of learning, based on description of the things, only help us to understand the externals of that thing. We really cannot penetrate the essence of it. For example, this is a table. And imagine somebody did not see a table at all. You start, and you don't see that person. You describe the table, right? You associate, you look at certain qualities, features of the table, and then you propagate that. And then based on those features, the person actually, when mentioned, you expect them to recognize table. How do you describe a table?
It's hard.
It's hard?
Mm-hmm.
Solid. I say at least one. Let's say four. So this is a description of Abhidhamma's description, pretty good description. Does it have a flat surface? Good. So this is a good description of the table. Actually, since we know what table is, we can, from this description, we can understand. As soon as she talks about table, I can associate, because I know. If I had not known table, if I had not seen, if I had not interacted with this object at all, it would have been extremely difficult for me to understand from this description, this is actually a table. Because not gas, not liquid, there are many solids with hard surface, with four legs. someone who you know, travels a lot with his horse, with that description, he can say that a horse is a tail. What I'm trying to say is that really it's your experience. It is what is in you is helping you to define, to associate from the description what is being told. If somebody leaves outer space, there's no gravity. Table doesn't make sense to him at all. Why do you need table in the outer space where there's no gravity? I put my cup like this and it's space. And then you keep describing table and table and table. This is crazy. If you don't have any experience using table, there is no way you understand what table is all about. So this is really the when you go to school, this is pretty much the standard methodology that we actually learn things, learn how to identify things based on their qualities, descriptions. Doctors work like that. And I doubt that my doctor knows me. I see him once every year. And every time he introduces himself as if I'm a new person. I mean, imagine how many patients the doctor sees during the year. Thousands. And every year I appear. And then he looks at the records and then kind of associate me with the records. Doctors work like that because they look at a lot of data, a lot of descriptions. And then based on those descriptions, sometimes they call those symptoms. Sometimes the measurements that you get from your blood, from your body measurements, there's whole kind of descriptions, feature values that is collected. And then based on that, he kind of try to diagnose. His diagnosis depends on that data that is collected. Machines do better than that. I mean, we teach machines, you know. Machines learn faster and make better identification than human beings most of the time. You know why? Because they can analyze the data faster and they are objective. That is, they don't have really past experience to make associations with anything. They objectively analyze and define things. Machines are fast in terms of diagnosis. Sometimes they work better than the doctors. Most of the time they work better than the doctors. I mean, if you identify a sickness, if you recognize that somebody a disease just based on data, then really you can make a lot of mistakes. There's another level of acquiring knowledge. So in this very low level of information collection, you don't know much about. You don't know the essence of things. You have some idea about the external, and then you kind of refer to you. If it is in you, you recognize. If it is not in you, you don't recognize. Better way is really to come to touch, to see the thing that you are trying to define. Not you don't only look at the descriptions that is told to you by other people. You don't only look at the opinion of other people, but you kind of go and touch. You kind of touch, you build your own description of it. You don't you're not really influenced by the other people's opinion. You have your own. You see it. And then as a result, you kind of try to recognize this. You identify what that thing is. once there was a vizier. You know, he's the second most powerful man in the land. You know, he was traveling, and when he stopped by in one of the villages, he saw a beautiful woman, and he decided to marry her. So it was an honor for the family, for the village. And then they sent the girl to the palace, and she married to the vizier. And after the marriage, she felt terribly sick. She stopped eating, she stopped talking, she didn't leave her room. And it was so, the situation was so difficult that the vizier was very worried about the health. And she was afraid that, he was afraid that she was going to die. So vizier called all the doctors of the land. And then they came, they checked, they, you know, look at the symptoms, tried to diagnose. They could not do anything. They could not do anything at all. Finally, there was no one else left. A vizier decided to go to a wise man who was a Sufi sheikh. So he came, entered the room. She was almost motionless. He approached to the vizier's wife. He held her hand and tried to talk. She was not responding. Well, he started to talk about everything. And he started to talk about the palace, the vizier. He started talking about the marketplace, the food. No response. She's not responding. And then he started talking about himself, where he lived. As soon as he started talking about a particular location, a city, he realized that her pulses started increasing. And then, you know, he started talking about that particular city that got her excited. He started talking about neighborhoods. When he mentioned a particular neighborhood, she got more excited. And then he started talking about the people in the neighborhood, because this is the place where the sheikh came from. She was even more excited when she was told about particular people and the culture. It turned out that she was in love with a man when vizier came and decided to marry her. I mean, her whole problem was she was really in pain of separation from his beloved, her beloved. This is the kind of diagnosis that requires that not only you have the data, but at the same time you see and kind of know exactly what causes the sickness. Knowing means that you must have experience of it. You must have experienced that particular problem to be able to recognize it. So, the best doctors are those who have suffered from a particular sickness. They know a lot about that illness, even more than a lot of doctors, because they themselves became sick. It is extremely familiar, that state is extremely familiar to them. They know the pain, they know what, you know, aggravates the pain, they know how they can relieve the pain. They know all about it because this is their life. They have been there. They have experienced there. Compare that person who is sick at one time with the doctors who have never experienced it, but they only recognize it through data. This is the really becoming it, becoming that object or concept or thing that you are trying to describe is the only way you can understand the essence, the truth of it. We all need mirrors to be able to learn. Learning about ourselves requires that we somebody should show us who we are. You need a mirror to be able to see yourself. And there's an hadith. Rasulullah says that mu'min is the mirror of a mu'min. That is, if you know someone who has his heart or her heart is polished, that person reflects the lights of the true mu'min. Hazreti Mevlana explains that true mu'min is the name of Allah Ta'ala. All the beautiful qualities of Allah Ta'ala is reflected from the heart of the other, of the believer. And when you look at each other, he advises that you can see the beautiful qualities, because when you see beautiful qualities in someone, if you are able to recognize it, then you must have it. Being able to recognize the good qualities as well as the bad qualities indicates that you must have it in yourself. Either you are suffering or you are enjoying it. Or you may be able to find it out after you see the beauty and surface that out which is inside you. Finding the true mirror so that you can see yourself is extremely important. The mirror helps us to transform ourselves. When you see something beautiful, and when you compare that or contrast that with what you have, then immediately it initiates a transformation in you. Once you transform yourself, then you become it. You must have either watched or read Les Miserables at least 3 times. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting story of transformation. It's an interesting story how different mirrors help people to transform themselves. At the same time, when you do not attempt to make this transformation, how the story actually is about how people destroy themselves. I know there are interesting characters, fictional characters, but actually it also, although they are fictional, it really gives a lot of lessons about how we look at people, how we make judgments, how we pass judgments about people. There is a self-righteous Inspector Javert, you know. There is a prisoner, Jean Valjean. I mean, originally when everything is started, they are not very much different than other. The Inspector Javert and Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean has been in the prison for 19 years for stealing bread for his sister who is starving. Imagine you spent 19 years incarcerated just because you steal a bread, and not for yourself, for your sister who is starving. So he is full of anger. He is full of anger and hatred to the system. He does not believe in justice, Jean Valjean. I mean, he thinks that there are the people who have the authority and who they oppress people, and there are the weak people like him. They are being oppressed, And they have all the right to rebel against the government. They have all the rights to fight for their rights. This actually, I think, this Victor Hugo's the way of life when he started, kind of a little leftist, that there's no way we can fight against these powerful aristocrats. We have to fight. Javert, on the other hand, the Inspector Javert, he is self-righteous, who believes that either people are right, good or bad. There's no way that people can change. And he thinks that he is one of the good ones, and his job is to chase after the bad ones and catch them and punish them. So he thinks that there are two types of people. He looks at himself as the righteous person, and his job is to find and punish the bad people. Interestingly enough, Inspector Javert was also born in the same prison that Jean Valjean stayed for 19 years. That is, they come from the same background. Javert and Jean Valjean belong to the same community. But inspectors, instead of looking at, it's all about being mirrored to each other, instead of looking at all these incarcerated people, instead of, you know, trying to find the qualities in them and reflect, and they, through their reflection, see something about himself, he chooses to hate them. You know, when you see yourself, when you see yourself in the mirror, and when you don't like yourself, the first thing that you do, the first reaction, automatic reaction that you do, this is not me. This is him, and he should be punished. That's Inspector Javert. And then, you know, probably all of you know the storyline. So the Jean Valjean deserves a parole. But the interesting thing is, Inspector Javert doesn't, when he looks at Jean Valjean, he doesn't want to see himself at all. He doesn't even call his name. There's no Jean Valjean in. He is 24601, right? 24601. He is 24601, and there is no human qualities in him. Inspector Javert will not accept any human quality. Because when he was a mirror for Inspector, he hated himself. The self-righteous Inspector. Anyway, the interesting, you know, every moment of our life is an opportunity for us to see ourselves, to see the beauty, if there is any, and surface it out, and try to eliminate any qualities that are not good. So one opportunity rises when Jean Valjean, you know, left the prison, and then he didn't have anything to eat. He did not have a job. Nobody wanted him because he was a prisoner once. No trust, and he doesn't trust anyone either. So this is a fight. This is a war between the innocent and aristocrats. So he steals. You know, he steals from a bishop the silvers, and then he gets caught. That's the turning point. So as soon as he was brought in front of the bishop says that he's not a thief. You know, these are the things that I gave to him. These are my gifts to him. He was my guest, and all the things that he took, my gifts to him. So here's a mirror. Here's a mirror for Jean Valjean. He looks at the bishop, and he remembers something that he forgot. He remembered that there's something, there's forgiveness that he forgot for long. So kind of Bishop fired this trust and forgiveness in him. So he started questioning himself. In our lives, we will have moments, we will have people, we are going to meet, we are going to face people, and they are going to help us remember who we actually are. That was one of those moments for Jean Valjean. And then he kind of started questioning that I cannot It is not the way. I cannot hate anyone. I am a human being. This, he touched, the bishop touched his heart. And with that love, he decided to change forever. This is really ultimate learning, that as a, if you really learn, you would have this desire to change. So he, you know, changed, and he became a powerful man. He became a mayor. He, you know, became rich. He had established factories. He had lots of workers working for him. He transformed himself. For Inspector Javert, he is still a thief. He is still 24601. Because he says that he believes that if a man is bad, he cannot be good. There's no way that they can transform. Either they are bad or they are born good. If they are born bad, there's no way they can transform. So he's after Jean Valjean, after he broke his parole. Inspector Javert had many opportunities too. So when they caught someone, and then they thought that it's Jean Valjean, and they, Inspector Javert was suspicious after he became the mayor, and then he approached him and said, "I'm sorry for being suspicious about you. The actual, prisoner, actual Jean Valjean, was caught." So here's the situation, another mirror, another situation for Jean Valjean. Was he sincere? When he transformed himself, so Allah Ta'ala is going to test you like this. When you think you change, you are going to be given opportunities and new trials. And after those trials, you have to, your sincerity will be checked. Jean Valjean, this is Jean Valjean's freedom forever. That somebody else was captured as him, and he was going to send to prison, and the case was going to close. Jean Valjean was going to stay free. He would take off care of his business. Here's the dilemma. Should I come forward and tell that I am Jean Valjean and go back to the prison for another 30 years? Or, everybody admires me. I help people. I have a company. A lot of people are depending on me. All those questions, actually, he kind of started again questioning. Who am I? Listen to the soundtrack. A lot of lessons. So after all those questioning, he decided to come forward and say that I am the one, and you're capturing. You're about to send the wrong person to the prison. Another opportunity for Inspector Javert, who believes that people cannot be transformed. Another mirror for Inspector Javert that he was wrong. So when we see in the mirror that we are wrong, when you see yourself, when you kind of all these interactions, trials will tell you if you are right or wrong. You, because you have the qualities and abilities to define and recognize if you are right or wrong. But if you are not sincere, you are going to deny. When you see you are wrong, you are not going to accept. And Inspector Javert did not. And then, the story continues. Inspector Javert had a chance to transform himself, because here, a person who Inspector Javert thought was a terrible man, all of a sudden is sacrificing himself for someone he doesn't know. He doesn't even know. Denied again, Inspector Javert. Until the last moment, that when he realized that really his self-righteousness is really coming from hatred of himself, because he doesn't want to see, he doesn't want to accept that he is one of those poor people who are oppressed. He just wanted to take side, and at the end, he could not accept who he really was, and then he commits a suicide. That was the end of Inspector Javert. Although these are fictitious characters, it's a good story that teaches us that to be able to learn who we really are, we need a mirror. We are mirrors for each other. When you see beauty, when you see something goodness in somebody else, it must be in you. Find it out, surface it out. And when you don't like what other people are doing, when you have the ability to recognize ugliness, when you have the ability to define, to identify what is bad, believe me that you have all those qualities in you. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, when he was sitting with his companion, a man, a non-believer, approached to him. He was angry and he started insulting him. He said, "You are the ugliest man I have ever seen." And then Rasulullah turned to him and said, "You are right." And then people were furious around him. And then after a while, Hazrat Abu Bakr approached and said, with love and compassion, "Ya Rasulullah, I have never seen anyone as beautiful as you are. You are the most beautiful man I've ever seen." And then he smiled and said, "You're right." And people around him were confused and asked him, "How is it that you say you're right to this non-believer when he insulted you, and you say you're right to Hazrat Abu Bakr when he declared his love to you?" And he said, "I am a mirror. They look at me and they see themselves." Salaam alaikum. Forget La Miserable. In Mesnevi, Hazreti Mevlana has a story. You know that story very well. This is the story of the lion and the rabbit. And in that story, there is this lion. And lion is powerful. He thinks he deserves everything. He is the king of the forest. So whenever he wants, whenever he's hungry, whenever he needs a snack, what he does is he actually goes out of his cave, approaches to the meadow, and then, you know, hides himself. And whenever he sees an animal appetizing, he attacks that animal and eats. The problem is that all the animals in the forest, they are very, very uncomfortable because there's no peace. They don't know what time he's going to attack. They don't know where he's going to come from. And they're always nervous about it. And they cannot enjoy the meadows. They cannot enjoy the forest. And then the wise animals, they gather together and then try to find a solution for this. And they found a very good solution. The solution is, they said, "Hey, at least we should live in peace in these meadows. You know, we cannot just, live with this anxiety that he's going to come out of behind one of those trees and attack. We cannot live like this. We have to find a solution." So the solution is, every day one of us is going to sacrifice himself. I mean, he's going to kill one of us anyway. So how about a lottery? It's a good solution. So they decided that we are going to have a lottery. Whoever is selected, you know, instead of him coming us and disturb us, at a time we don't know when, at a place we don't know where, the best thing is we go to the cave, feed him, and the rest of the animals are safe. Safe from the tyranny of the king of the forest. Well, It's a logical, sound decision. So everybody unanimously accepted it. There are hundreds, thousands of animals, so they don't think it's very likely that it's going to hit to one of them. So they started implementing the solution. Every day, the lottery, one of the animals is selected. He goes and offers himself as either as a snack or a breakfast or a lunch, whatever. Before that, they kind of approached to the king and they said, my king, you are the sultan, you are the owner, you are your subjects. It doesn't befit you to come to the meadows to look for your food. It is our job to offer ourselves. Since you are the king, you should be fed. It doesn't befit to a king to come to the forest to seek for his own food. They convinced the lion that the lion should really stay in his cave and do not disturb anyone. So when the time came, so every day somebody is giving, somebody is going and sacrificing himself, and everybody's happy. There is incredible peace in the meadows and the forests. And then when the lottery hit the rabbit didn't like it at all. And then he said that, this is ridiculous. This is not a good solution. And he started to convince everyone that we have to stop him. This is not the way we can solve. There is no difference. If we are going to sacrifice ourselves for this tyrant, this is not a good solution. So, of course, the animals did not buy it. They said, hey, this is your turn. You have to go. And then he said, I'm going to stop this tyranny. And he had a plan. So that night, he was a little late. And the lion was extremely angry and furious. He was also hungry. Hungry, and his food was not offered. And he was really roaring around and then deciding how to punish them. He said that they are, making fool of me. I trusted them. They are liars. So he's really making preparations to have this attack and kill many of those animals. But just before he did that, rabbit appeared, really breathing heavily. And he came and approached to the king, and the king was about to, attack him and punish him. He said, my sultan, my king, something terrible happened. I was very excited this morning because I had the honor to offer myself to you. And not only that, but since you're such a good king, not only me, but my friend also volunteered himself to offer to you as a dinner. So two of us were coming to visit you and offer ourselves for your dinner. But what happened was a monster came out of nowhere, and then he attacked us. He claimed that he is the king of the true king of the forest. He grabbed and kidnapped my friend. He disappeared. When the king listens to all these things, he got really upset. How could anyone claim that I'm not the king? How could anyone claim kingship other than me here? And then he was so furious and asked the rabbit to bring him to the monster so that he's going to fight and then claim his kingdom back. So the rabbit took him to a well. When they come to a well, rabbits started shivering and then jumped to the arms of the lion and said, I am so afraid because the monster is really hiding in this well. And then lion was holding the rabbit, approaches to the well and looks inside the well. Inside the well, he saw himself holding with a face furious, but he couldn't recognize himself. And then as soon as he saw himself holding the rabbit with this furious face, the rabbit says, can't you see it? He is there, holding my friend. And then the lion jumps into the well. And then as it appears, Mevlana ends the story. So the forest was saved from this tyrant. the whole story is again about lion being our nefs, but not recognizing himself. See, that this is an opportunity. Like, so Jean Valjean, this is like Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean is going and stealing the silver from someone who helped him when he was hungry, when there was no place to stay. A bishop takes him in, and he is about to leave that place as a thief. But he looks at himself. When he looks at the mirror of the heart of the bishop, he sees that, oh my God, this is an animal. I cannot be this. I don't want to be this. In the mirror, when he sees himself, he looks at himself as someone, you know, betraying a good person. He did not want to be that. He decided to change himself. The line in Mesnevi's story is like Javert. It's like Inspector Javert. He looks at himself. He saw himself. He denied. He would not accept that he is that animal. He is that tyrant. So either you accept that it is you and transform yourself, or you don't accept, which means that you kind of destroy your own life.